of Black Columbus, and it's done that way intentionally, not to exclude anyone, but to put a particular emphasis on where we need to be having conversations and how we need to be maneuvering in our community to address some of the things that plague us. Part one of the conversation, assessing the community, Black leaders and the organizations that lead us. And I just want to say a few things as we continue to transition forward. The show is designed to help our community discuss issues and find answers to the problems that currently plague us. Just to name a few, during the year of 2017, Columbus experienced 35 GBI-recognized homicides and 9 other violent deaths, according to the Ledger Inquirer. Within the last few weeks, we have experienced multiple violent shootings and multiple homicides. Though it was previously expressed Columbus, Georgia doesn't have gangs, Sheriff Donald Tompkins recently shared that 400 out of 1,066 inmates in the Muskogee County Jail are validated members of a street gang. That's more than 37% of the jail population. In 2017, United Way of Chattahoochee Valley cut funding to 2 critical African-American institutions, the Columbus Community Center and the Urban League of Columbus. Just this summer, the entire NAACP leadership team were removed from office after an administrator was appointed by the national office to intervene in local chapter challenges. According to the information website School Digger, Muskogee County School District ranked 130 out of 182 districts in the state. The Muskogee County School District is 58% African-American, and many of the schools are in predominantly African-American neighborhoods. According to Data USA, Columbus, Georgia is 44.5% African-American, 41.8% white, and 7.39% Hispanic. However, Columbus, Georgia has never elected, key word, a non-white mayor and has not had a racial minority in an at-large city council seat since the retirement of A.J. McClung in 1998. Columbus and West Georgia continues to lag behind the state with unemployment rates. The state unemployment rate as of June 2018 is 4.1%, while our region sits at 5.1%. Unemployment continues to be highest among the African-American race that includes the Columbus area. We're here today to have a conversation about many of the things and many of the statistics that you just heard there on the air. I'm excited to have today with me panelists of individuals, one starting with Dr. Curtis Crocker, pastor of Metropolitan Baptist Church. Thank you, Dr. Crocker, for being here.
Thank you for having us.
We have with us Ms. Tamika McKenzie, a higher education professional. Thank you, Ms. McKenzie.
Thank you, Ted.
We have with us Adrian Chester, pastor of Greater Bellwood Baptist Church. Thank you, Pastor Chester. We also have with us Ms. Linda Parker, former school board member.
Thank you, Teddy.
Thank you for being here as well. And we have with us Reverend J.H. Flakes III, pastor of 4th Street Missionary Baptist Church.
Thank you.
And last but not least, we have with us Dr. Judy Purnell, former professor at Columbus State University.
Thank you.
I'm also delighted to be joined with us today two of Columbus' best and brightest graduates from Carver High.
It's a university.
As well as Shaw High School. We have Destiny Elliott, who is a second-year student at Georgia State University in Atlanta.
Yes, I'm a junior now.
Yes. Congratulations. And we also have with us Mr. Demetrius Ernest, who is a second-year student at Albany State University.
Nice to be with you all. Hello.
All right, so let's get started. We don't have but an hour. This is a serious matter. We want to get down to the material here so that you can hear from the panelists as we continue with our conversation. We also, before I get started, I want to thank our Marshal Greg Contraman for sending over Deputy Marshal L. Marshall to be with us here today. Thank you so much, sir, for helping us keep the peace. And I also do want to recognize Mr. John House. He's with us today. He's recently elected city council member at large. Do we have any currently elected officials in the building? We also have Judge Art Smith here. And we have the current serving clerk of Superior Court, Shasta Glover, here as well. And we also have Judge Stephen Smith. I'm sorry, my eyes are not as good as they used to be, Judge Smith. I apologize. Don't take it against me if I come before you now. Yes, sir. All right. And we're in the midst of an election as well. We have some candidates that are currently on the ballot. We have Mr. Randy Robinson, who is running for state senate. What's your district? 29. We have Ms. Danielle Forte, who is a candidate for Superior Court Clerk. Anyone else here in the facility we need to recognize today? We want to thank you for taking your time out for being here. You could have been anywhere else. But we're going to go ahead and get started with our questions here. Does it matter from a leadership perspective, Ms. Parker, that we've never elected a black mayor? Do you think that some of the conditions we see in our community today are related to failed leadership or the lack of political power in the minority community?
Thank you, Teddy. You know, in Columbus, we have many, many people. Now, and I wrote this down a few weeks ago. We have residents in our community. We have 200,000 plus people registered in our community. You know, we can go and register some more people if we want to, but our people need to be educated. If we are not educating our people, getting that word across of the importance of voting and who to vote for, and look and study who to vote for, we are lost. We will be lost. And as far as a minority mayor in our community, we should have a minority male in our community. We have one over in Phoenix City. And there's no reason why. There's no reason why we shouldn't. We have enough people in our community that's educated and ready to be a mayor in our community. We just have to seek that person out, Teddy.
Thank you so much, Ms. Parker. We're going to transition this on Reverend Flakes before this take another, this forum take on another shape. Reverend Flakes, you've seen a great line of leadership here in this community. You've worked with a lot of different people in the community, yet there are people that feel that certain parts of our city are constantly being left behind. And for Columbus as a whole, which is part of why we're having this conversation, you know, you can't move much as an entity if part of it is lagging. Like I said, you know, the weakest link is what eventually will hurt you. What's your assessment of parts of our community? Do you think that we have failed from a leadership perspective, or do you see some improvements that we can make to bring more attention and help to part of the community that need it the most?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for allowing me to be a part of this wonderful panel that you have here. I noticed one thing that you had mentioned. You want two perspectives. And I think sometimes what happens is that we can actually have one-dimensional views of our city. I went back and I began to look at some things that have actually been printed for our city. And one was Columbus ranks in the top 10 in the United States for black households making $100,000 or more. Now that was found and it was updated. This is an article that was written by Alva Jones, who's a reporter from the Ledger Inquirer. But she actually received and gotten information and compiled information according to a 2015 African-American consumer report published by the Nielsen Corporation. And the report is entitled, Increasing Affluent, Educated, and Diverse African-American Consumers, The Untold Story. And so what we began to look at is that's basically a 3% of African-Americans here in Columbus that makes over $100,000. But we don't get really hoodwinked and bamboozled by that low percentage. Mm-hmm. But there is 50% or more that's at a $50,000 or less income. So I think there has been some progress made. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of the debate between Dr. Du Bois and also Booker T. Washington, President Booker T. Washington, and it was the talented 10th versus those who would basically go into service, entrepreneurial types of services or jobs. And one of the things that really, I think, with Dr. Du Bois that elevated at the time was the education aspect. But the thing that got lost was that those who were a part of the talented 10th, they were not to create a bourgeois classist type of category. or segment, but they were basically being lifted up to reach back to help those who otherwise were not able to be educated. I think we've forgotten that aspect. And I think when we began to look at our own community, then I think we have to look within that we kind of dismantle and deconstruct this classist type of environment that says that there are some over there that makes it, and we have an exodus out of our communities. And I'm okay with exodus out of the community as long as you come back to the community.
And
you
don't
forget the community.
And I think you're right. I think that's a good point. And I think it matters where those individuals, where if we're at 3%, I think it matters where they're located, because their financial impact is going to have a huge community. Like, it would be interesting to know what percentage of that 3% lives south of Macon Road. And how many of them are contributing to the part of the community, the other 97%, that need that financial aspect of it. Now Reverend Flakes brought in a city ranking of us being one of the top 10 in the U.S. with black households making over $100,000, and Reverend Flakes, you certainly educated me on that. That's awesome. Dr. Purnell, recently, Destiny and Demetrius and I had an opportunity to speak with a group of high school students, high school seniors from five high schools here in the city. And we talked to them from their perspective on the Sunday Conversation Show because we wanted to hear from them. Too often, and they express this themselves, too often they're ignored, they're not listened to. And I'll let Destiny and Demetrius say some of the other comments that they made. But I asked them to grade the city as they would be graded in school. And the overwhelming grade and the highest grade was a C, with one person giving the city a D. Demetrius and Elliot, Destiny and Demetrius, what were some of the other comments made by those students, and you two being recent graduates of high school and relating to what they were saying? Share with the panelists some of the other comments made by those students.
Well, in one of the situations, we were discussing the shootings that have been taking place, and how the students had went to the school board to try to do a peaceful protest, and that they said that it was more controlled when they actually got to speak in front of the school board instead of it being them from the heart. And that damaged, and it kind of made me look at it as, okay, our children and our society are being hushed. And I felt that way going through high school as well over certain situations.
That young lady was moved to tears.
Yeah, she was
crying. She was moved to tears with her comment. Destiny, you remember that, right?
Yes, I do. And it was saddening, honestly, because they're only about three generations behind me. So imagine what two generations behind me feel, one generation behind me feels. They feel that they're being ignored. And I believe that the children are the future. This panel right here, there are going to be generations that are going to fill you all displaces. So their emotions, their feelings really matter. I felt like when they were talking, they were grading the city, I felt like they were my little sisters and brothers, you know, simply because I know that they are going to be filling the places of officials in the city. So their perspectives, their feelings and everything matter. And I feel like now is the time to listen to them, to pursue their perspectives as well before it's too late.
Dr. Purnell, I'm interested in hearing your take on what you just heard.
I think that, let me say this in reference to personal empowerment. That's something that you have to be taught. It has to be something that you mimic. Individuals have to be leaders and empower young people. And let me say this, and I know a lot of people are going to probably frown a little bit when I say this. But when the schools in Columbus, I grew up in Columbus. As a matter of fact, I grew up on Casita Road near E. County Housing Project. There was no such thing as, my parents were not doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs. So you have to have the right type of instruction, not only in the home, but in the community. People need to see folks moving. Columbus has been one of those cities for many years that's been a slow roll, you know, in education. We were almost 50 years behind in getting a high school. Then there was no public library. Education and economics usually go hand in hand. Once you divide the city that way and don't try to make up the difference. Now, one of the things that I would suggest is that all of the individuals that grew up in Columbus that were part of the segregated school system when there was no high school, that if you are a descendant of one of those individuals, that the city of Columbus would provide free tuition at Columbus Tech. We got to try to, you can't do catch up, but you can try to level the playing field. Once you're in a city also where there has not been numerous protests, where folks have seen folks actually dealing with government as in mass groups. The only time we came to, there was a mass group when that was a, when the young man was killed by the police officer. Then it was a Kenny Walker, that was a major rally. But other than that, what we find, most people have short-term memory, so we can't push forward. Students, young people are not taught to be leaders. You have to train a leader. It's like training a warrior. How do you get a person ready for the battle? Until you get them to bring them up so they can understand their history. And that's not taught in Columbus. Columbus history is not taught. Black African studies is not taught. And I know that because I taught it. And I'm sitting here, and the classes are going on at Columbus State right now. We have to start asking and demanding and demonstrating through our actions so our children can see that, yes, you have to push. You have to take a chance. And that's just the way it is. I mean, we train. You have to
right.
train them.
Right.
And then when they have that rite of passage that this young lady had, when she was brought to tears when she found out that nobody's listening. Well, no one was listening to us during the 60s, but they heard us.
All right. Dr. Crocker, I want to get your perspective on that as well, because, you know, every Sunday, as you administer the word of God to your church members at Metropolitan, as they leave, they have a close-up visual of Claflin School, one of the first historical black schools right here in this city. You know, as we look at education, and we want to thank our school board chair, Kia Chambers, for being here. Thank you so much, Kia. As we think about education and look at where we are and how we're treating the treatment that our young people are conveying that they're receiving, you know, what's your thoughts on that?
First of all, once again, thank you for having me here, Teddy, and thank you for the invitation. My thoughts on the educational systems and how the children now are being left behind. Dr. Purnell hit it the nail on the head. We have allowed some of our teachings to be taken away from us. I remember in 1966, Stokely Carmichael coined the phrase black power. It was not a disrespectful statement, but what it was designed to do was to help fight the racism that was associated within the community. Even in our educational systems, we still have a form of I don't want to say racism, but we're lacking in a lot of areas where we don't understand who we are, where we come from, so forth and so on. I think that education needs to be well-rounded. But we also need to begin to start teaching leaders how to lead. And someone mentioned something earlier about leadership and the young people not being heard. Chap Clark wrote in a book called Hurt, and he talked about how adolescents are being put to the side by us older folks. And when the children have been put to the side, then they create these organizations. And you know what? They're going to be heard whether we want to listen to them or not. What has happened, though, like you mentioned in the churches, because we're not taking the time to listen to them adequately, they're leaving our churches and going elsewhere. So we have a community of the unchurched. Now, let's be real. All of these things that we're talking about now, there is a faith, a spiritual connotation that goes along with it. We're suffering because we have taken the faith out of everything, the schools, how we interact with people. We've taken, I don't care whether you're Muslim, Christian, Jews, we've taken the faith base out of the community. And once we return back to the faith portion, I believe that there will be change. Until then, we will always be separate. We will always have the crabs in the barrel syndrome. We will always be lagging behind because we have left something vital out of the process, and that's the faith-based community.
And that's a good point. And Dr. Kirk, I think we have a great opportunity here. Even if you look around the room today, we have a nice mixture of leadership and influential people from our city. This is the state of Black Columbus, but we have, and I'm going to say, a great number of Caucasian members of our community who wanted to come and be a part of this conversation. And we welcome that because we understand that we can't do this alone. And I ask that you not become uncomfortable with the conversation, but we're going to continue to have blunt conversation because we've sugarcoated things too much right here in Columbus and for too long. And it's time for us to put the facts on the table. Let's address them as they are, and let's stop pretending that we don't have issues.
That's right.
And that's the only way we'll be able to address and actually handle these issues.
I'm glad you said that, because we have to be able to identify what the problems are.
Right.
And at some point, come to the table like this. This is not the only table, I believe, that needs to take place.
This
other
is part
forms
one.
That need to take place, because we, and Teddy, and outstanding job, but I really believe you need to bring some people whose families are out there who have suffered.
Absolutely.
Some people who have lost some children, some people who are doing some things. We are here. We have the congregations, we have the the leadership, whatever. But at the end of the day, I think we need to expand this conversation to the entire community so we can come to some type of solution together.
Well, you know, I'm not going to pretend to be able to speak on Mr. Greg Davis, but he and Davis Broadcasting has been an intricate part of this community for a long time. And I know he's committed. And everyone at that station right down Wynn Road, they're committed to seeing a better Columbus. And Janice has promised me we're going to continue these conversations. I know we will. So what you just said will not go on deaf ears. But since you put the church on the table, and since we have three pastors in the room, Pastor Chester, I'm going to move on over here to you.
Is that right?
Because my question to you is, historically, the churches have been the foundation of our community. You know, my grandma used to talk about back in the day when they used to walk to church, and how her mother talked to her about how they would have meetings in less desirable conditions, in the heat, sometimes out there at picnic tables. But that's where the Black community came together. And the question is, many churches struggle today with attracting and retaining a younger membership, roughly between the age of 18 and 45, compared to historical precedent. How can this be fixed? As one of the youngest youngest pastors in the city, how can we fix this? And is it an issue of relevance? And where did we go wrong?
Thank you, Teddy.
Yes, sir.
For saving that question for me. as it relates to the context of the Black church, historically, the Black church has been a place of known for resistance. That where the what we know as the Black church in the ecclesia, God just sees the church, right? But in our context, our foreparents saw that the worship experience and even the messaging of what we knew coming off of slave plantations did not line up with the God in which we saw in the Bible. For we were presented with a God in the Bible, as James Cone talks about in his book, The God of the Oppressed. We were presented a God that condoned one human being being superior to another human being, and it was blamed on a false biblical interpretation of the curse of Ham, as we see there in the book of Genesis. And so our foreparents decided to, okay, well, if we can't worship God in the way in which we see fit in those churches, we'll just organize in bush arbors. So at the very essence, the organized Black church, or hush arbors, has been a place that has been rooted in a voice of resistance, not out of hate or disregard, but just out of a place of meeting the needs of those in whom worship there, and following a theological understanding of God that met the needs, that God was always on the side of those who were oppressed, that God is always on the side of those who are marginalized. God is always on the side of those who are seeking help, the least, the lost, and the left out. If you look at the story of Jesus, that was his mission, that he said.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Valid points. But to my three pastors on the table, for somebody out there listening on Cassidy Road who said, you know, but how can God stop us from having our young folks killed almost every week? How can we stop the deaths?
And so that's where I'm getting to.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Bring me on down.
Yes, sir.
Bring me on down, Pastor. We don't have but an
thank
hour.
You, thank you, sir.
We don't
thank
have
you,
but an
that's
hour.
What, that's what I'm getting at. I'm getting at. So that's what Jesus talked about. When I was in jail, you came to see me. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was hungry, you gave me food to eat. And so in the context in which we talk about relevance, that there are many, not only millennials or that age group in which you classify there, but there are some people saying that the black church or the church as we know it is not operating in the vein in which they understand or interpret the Bible, right? And so now we have a generation, somewhat of a generation, one that is not, that does not know, does not understand the roots of the black church. And then you also have on the other end black churches that are not operating from a biblical standpoint. Mm-hmm. So some people see the church as a place where people are being pimped on Sunday morning. And so until we holistically and broad base get back to those who have gone off kilter, get to a base of doing what Jesus did, mm-hmm. right? And meeting the needs. And so meeting the needs means that there are times where the church is going to have to step up and call out the injustices in our world, right?
Right.
And so many people don't see the black church as relevant, not only millennials, but even older people, because you have some black churches who have been co-opted into a false reality of what the church ought to be.
And Flays and Crocker and Chester, you know, y'all are my friends, so I'm not beating up the black church.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've attended black church all my life, and I believe in the church. But we got to have this, and I appreciate what you shared. And there, those are some points of relevance. And Ms. Parker, you're not a pastor, but however you attend a church that's right down the street from Carver High School.
Yes, I do.
Carver Heights area, right there in that area. One of the most challenged areas here in the
city.
It's scary sometimes. Yeah. And can you speak on how do we reach? Go ahead.
First, let me just say, as far as the prayer out of the schools and stuff like that, you know, we got to get back to our parents. We have to get back to our parents. The parents got to tell their children, look, when you get to school, you pray and ask God to help you that day. You know, you ain't got to let everybody know that you praying. I'm praying now that I say the right thing.
Say what's on your heart, sister.
All right. And it's a solution to that. You know, it may be a legislation solution, but our parents, and this is not putting the blame on all the parents. I have three children. All three of them have three different ideas. They came up in the same household. They had the same mom and daddy. We did the same things. But I got one that do what he want to do. So my solution to that, and I may be getting off the religious part but I don't think so, because if the parents does not get involved with their children, and this is something that I brought to the attention when I was on the board, parents, when your children are acting up, it should be mandatory that they get to that school, even if they have to sit there with them. And I know that that is a legislative issue, and the legislation don't want to hear it because they know that parents are working, and you know, but if we don't, you know, it's nothing we could do now with the grown folks out there now killing each other.
But see, to counteract it, well, not necessarily to counteract it, but to show some of the consequences of that, if you look at the suspension rate of our black children in Columbia, that's the impact of us not dealing with the issues on the front end. And so let me get Dr. Purnell here, then I'm gonna come back to you, Reverend Fletcher.
I just want to deal
go
with
ahead, go
the
ahead.
Religious.
Go ahead.
I'm
yes, sir.
Fix it. All right.
Yes, it needs to be fixed.
There are two research groups, the Nielsen Research Group and the S Group, that is short term in order to get somewhat of a collective body of data and look at it in terms of its trends to try and draw conclusions of coming up with solutions or what the problems are. The Pew basically says that millennials are this young lady right here and this young man right here, they, and just on this panel, we have to make sure we're listening, because what millennials are saying is not that they don't want to come to a black church, but they're saying, so that's the thing I think we have to really tune into, that we have to make sure that we're not doing production and entertainment, but when they speaks to their issues, it speaks to the hurt and the pain, but it also says that you have a place here. You have a place. You don't have to wait until, even with the clothing, I think a lot of times people hear this thing, come as you are. That has nothing to do with clothing biblically. Mm-hmm. Had everything to do with come as you are in terms of your, or continuing to have persons between 18 and 34 remain in the church. We have to make up what the doctrine. And two, we have to listen to them. That is coming alongside them and modeling. The church is not the primary place of educating from a Christological, from a theological, bibliocentric perspective. It's in the home. The church only reinforces what exactly is being taught in the home. Judges 2 says in the Old Testament, there was a generation that was raised to not know God. We have generations. It wasn't the generation's fault that didn't know God. It was the generation prior to them because they didn't teach them. When we begin to look at our history, we have to make sure, even in Columbus as a black community, we know our history. How many know who Alma Thomas is? How many know who Black Tom Wiggins is? How many know who Eugene Bullock is? How many know who Dr. Primus King or Dr. John Thomas Brewer or Dr. Clark? How many of us know that history? Because there were those who stood up in the face of racism, discrimination, injustices. It just didn't start now. It didn't. There were major movements right here in this city that stood up to the status quo, that stood up to the injustices. It just didn't happen when Mr. Walker got killed. It was way before then. The question is, do we continue to pick up the mantle? Religious perspective, from a social justice perspective, from whatever aspect of our community that's going to need all of us to come together.
Accomplishing that is meeting our young people where they are. Right now, they're on social media looking at pastors asking for money to buy planes and Rolls Royce and Bugattis. That's what's being passed around versus the,
But they're seeing mommy and daddy buy into it.
They're seeing mommy and daddy buy into it. Absolutely right. Dr. Purnell, I'm going to let you get in on this real quick because I know you want to touch this.
There are so many things I would like to say. And many times when we talk about history, even in the church, and one of the things that I teach, and even in African history, I had the opportunity to do a lecture where I made Jesus black. And one of because of geography and geography, as well as the fake ones in the movie Black Panther. We should not have to wait until Hollywood tells us who is relevant based on humanity. Africa is the Garden of Eden. It is the origin of humankind. It is the origin of humanity. Well, nobody says that. And when we talk about the Bible, the first five books only use Egypt. So most people think that Egypt is not a part of that. So our children grow up thinking that everything that is powerful and great happens to be white, when in reality we know better. And we do not teach it. The schools are not going to teach it. Nobody's going to empower you to take over anything. According to Dr. Malif Asante, he says that we must deconstruct education and teach it correctly. If we can start it correctly, then we wouldn't have pockets of history. One, all humans came from Africans. All of you sitting out there, because man is all one. All humans came from Africans. All of you sitting out there are descendants of Africans, whether you are black or white. The genetic structure changed as man migrated out. So if we don't teach it right, then our children don't feel empowered. They got to know who they are.
So what we've heard here is a lack of generational teaching.
Lack of generational teaching.
We've heard a lack of parenting, which is going to be a big challenge, because when you have 15-year-olds raising children, when the mama and the daughter in the club at the same time, when the daddy and the son sharing a jail cell down there in right across the road from us here downtown at the Liberty Theater, that becomes problematic. But we have four. Yes.
But let me say this. Parents, the people can't teach what they don't know. Columbus has denied people education over the years. When I went to school here, I never got a new textbook. William Henry Shaw ensured that didn't happen. We had to make it against the odds. And it is an embarrassment that sometimes we don't mention these things. You know, I may say this, and I know a lot of people in the city always think that I say things that a lot of people don't want to say, but I was really surprised when they put William Henry Shaw's name on a school, since I was a Negro student here in Columbus. And when I left junior high, I was the number one Negro student in the city, according to them. I was at straight A's, but that was not the white student's A. So don't let us not be fooled. You know, things are okay, but they are not okay when people are not educated properly. Carter G. Woodson said the miseducation of the Negro. Yes. We are miseducated, even at HBCUs. And when you come to Columbus, there's no such thing as African studies being taught here. But Martin Luther King came here, of all the cities in the South that he went to, this is the only one that he came to once. He said he'd never come back. Black people didn't come out because they were afraid. This city has been threatened. So many people in this city, we've been terrorized to the point where you don't push for real deal things. Now, education is the key. If you want to grow and be somebody, make change, you have to be educated. White people, black people, segregation affected all of us, especially me. I was born during the 40s. I don't know anything about integration, but I went to Columbus State and taught reading, and I am the granddaughter of a slave.
Wow. Okay. That was powerful. All right. So all of my listeners out there in radio land, and we have people that are listening to us all the way as far south as Dothan, Alabama, down near the Florida Panhandle. We have just that much reach here with Davis Broadcasting, all the way up to LaGrange, down toward Albany and Dawson. And though we are talking about Columbus, the things that we are discussing is relevant to all of our listeners when it comes to improving our communities and working together. Now, we've heard a lot. We've heard a lot. We've been able to conclude a lot from where, how do we move forward? Now I want to kind of transition to the young folks, because we have four young professionals here on the panel, including our young people there in college. And I want to start with you, Ms. Tamika McKenzie, and start with this question here that was submitted to me to make a part of this discussion. Many young people feel ignored by leadership and community elders. How do we build avenues of communications from a young person perspective that leaves room for respect for everyone in the conversation?
Well, thank you, Teddy, for saving that question for me, and thank you for holding this forum. What we can do, because it is hard, because the generational gap is hard, but if you want to be in leadership and get to know that person, you need to go to these places where they are, network, you have to get out of your end with, you kind of have to meet them where they are, because leaders who
What do you mean they may not want to come to you? I just heard Reverend Flake say that the motto is us listening to each other and reaching out. Why would a young person feel?
Because I think because some of them may feel threatened,
okay.
Possibly. They may want to keep all the knowledge to themselves, and you have, like I said, they don't want to let it go. They don't want to share the knowledge.
Do you think a peaceful transition of power in Columbus, do you think that is possible? And we're going to rally our young people, we're going to go out and vote, and it's going to get ugly, and we know it, but we don't care. Do you think a peaceful transition is possible?
We have to... like I said, you had to keep moving forward. You had to keep going.
Keep moving forward. Keep it going. Pastor Chester. Well, you know, power is being used in this concept not for someone to have an advantage or gain, but just to talk about positions of influence, being in a place where you can direct a budget, being in the potwalks and things of that nature. How do we have a peaceful transition to power?
On my end, I don't necessarily think it will be peaceful without it seeming as if people are trying to overthrow the quote-unquote establishment.
Okay, peaceful is seeing people like John Lewis and David Scott and other congressmen in Atlanta say we are going to support Keisha Lance Bottoms for mayor. Mm-hmm. Peaceful is seeing state senators and state reps and other city council members saying, yes, I sat with you and across from you and we worked on legislation together, but your actions are not beneficial for the people I serve, so therefore we got to have a difference.
Yeah, I don't foresee it being peaceful by that, or at least without any feelings being hurt, because it's a reality here in Columbus. We support to a degree legacy leadership. Look in its most voting record and number one where they get their funding from. right? Like if you go look at disclosures, you're like, oh, I didn't realize they getting money from, yeah, you know, blase blase, and we're not talking about just the local kind of money makers here in Columbus. We're talking about what is that corporation, the Prison Corporations of America. You have elected officials in Columbus who have or are receiving money from people who support the privatizing of prisons, right? You got black folks in Columbus who are receiving money from those particular entities. I don't think it will be peaceful. The only way that it will happen with some level of peace is of it being intentional. And I'll say this very quickly. Time and time again, we hear the glory stories, right? And so the glory stories are that at one point in time, there were at least three black people in Columbus who carried the big stick. That was Judge Albert Thompson, A.J. McClung, and George Ford, right? And so what nothing happening in Columbus to a degree, you know, you have some pastors and things of that nature, but those non-religious leaders and everybody went to those persons who, you know, that's how you got things moved in Columbus. You know, if you were white, that's where you went to get things done. If you were black and trying to do something. And so I don't see that the people who have benefited from that system are putting other people on, right? And putting other people on is not giving up your spot, but at least being an intentional mentor to those who are going to have to fill these spots. Because if we don't make it intentional, especially when you start talking about gentrification and, you know, moving people around the city. So that's all I got.
Okay. Now, Reverend Flakes, I want to ask you a question. We're talking about whether transitions and leadership will be peaceful or not. Some people feel like we are not prepared for the next generation of leaders in the city. Have we done enough for the passing of the leadership torch? And also, can you name at least 5 young professionals that you feel are ready for leadership?
We ain't gonna put you on the spot. You can drop the last part, but if you want to drop some names, that's all you, Reverend Flakes. But we ain't gonna make you do that.
Thank you for the question.
I guess inherently it's problematic for me to be using words as peaceful or not peaceful, taking, because that gives a sense of anarchy. You got to take. That reminds me of the Tea Party playbook 5 or 6 years ago, page number 25. You know, is that we have to basically take what we want. And I think what we have to do, particularly in terms of this day and time, is make sure that we respect people in leadership. And I think it has to be an intentional sitting down and making leadership, whether you want to see them in power, because I like what you went back and be defined in terms of influence, and how does that influence get passed on, undermine, or inherently become problematic in our usage that sets up some perceptions that may preparing leaders will be respectful and also be willing to liberation and say, this is what I desire. Will you mentor me? That is, will you help me? I think we have to look at our attitudes. And I think we have to look at really how we communicate. We have to look at, there is this mentality that nobody's done nothing. And it's like we're going not ones that's going to come in and be there's a kingdom that's called the Messiah complex, that persons have that and thinking they have the answer. And so I think we have to make sure that persons deal with value systems. And the word generation gap I have problems with, you know, inherently it's problematic for me. The reason is because I don't believe there is one. Now, some people would look at me and say, oh, my God, you are blind. No, I understand chronologically and by age, there's a generation gap. I understand that. I mean, that's just by age, okay? But when we come to a point of understanding how you bridge gaps, you have to spend time with people. The way that we eradicate racism, Mm-hmm. You got to sit down and talk with people.
Right, right.
The way people need, the way leaders need to know that you are interested, it is not going out taking anything. That's an elitist. That's a person who feel that they're entitled to something. And so that creates, we've lost those values of appreciating legacy, appreciating tradition, appreciating what can be passed on, and also being creative and innovative to expand that, to build on. So I think those are the things that we have to really get back to and remind and not create this emotional, and sometimes we take things and we politicize it because we have our own agenda sometimes. Mm-hmm. But we have to make sure that we have the best interest of everyone because everyone brings things to the table.
And Reverend Flake, those are some very, very great points. Thank you, Destiny, for that question. And I asked it because generations before that said the same thing about the folks that we look to now as leader ourselves. They told Dr. Martin Luther King that he was incorrectly. I'm agreeing with you.
No, I understand, but let's make sure we paint the picture because sometimes I think we broad brush and we overgeneralize. King really wasn't the first one considered for the movement. Mm-hmm. We have to go back and look at that.
Yeah.
We have to know.
The point, right, that's the history of generation after generation. Each generation before the next one have said, you know, my grandmother listened to my mom's generation music. And I'm sitting here talking about, oh my God, you listen to that? You know, mama's coming home and out literature to act. All have facts that we have. Some challenges that have plagued us generation after generation that we have some very good points, and I think you identified it on the head, and I'm not challenging that.
No, I don't feel it. You are. I'm just right, saying, okay, as okay, we absolutely. What our reality is and what we believe, that's how we tend to act.
But I think we move, in addition to that, we move forward with common ground understanding.
The only way we can get common ground understanding is to get common ground education and knowledge. Everyone has to know the same thing. And what we're doing, City of Columbus School Board Report, 1914, white students were graduating with college prep. They were taught how to wash and iron clothes. Why? White students, like the Curvins, Woodruff, and that was in the 1800s, the latter part of the 1800s. That wasn't even a high school here in Columbus. So when we started talking about things, people need to all have the same understanding. Because without that, we're not, you can't equalize it. You cannot, there's no way to do it. You know, and education does that. And one of the things in Columbus I would like to see people do is push to change the curriculums in these schools. Because if you don't teach children differently, they're going to come out and be violent. They're going to drop out of school because of the lack of inclusion. And I always say that education and immigration in this country needs to catch up.
Well, you know, education is just not in our school district. Now, when we close down our recreational centers in our communities that would teach children over the summer.
Mentored over the years. Now, I know that some of them may have come out a little bit radical, because if you listen to me long enough, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. I'm not gonna try to make you feel good. And I used to tell students, if they took my class in African American studies, that if I made you feel good.
Right.
Now,
right.
I know at the right. church, that's a different thing. Mm-hmm. But when you're in a classroom, and you're talking to people of different races, some story grounds them feel, in my case, that slavery was a benign institution, because it wasn't.
Well, now we're down to 2 minutes, and I want to get this last question in because to me this is the most that we have shown each other, how we've listened to each other. We were not here necessarily to the city, and areas of the city can be hurt. Last question, and Croc, I'm going to start with you. We continue to suffer from not remind everyone what happened in the panhandle of this county. We reflect on the violent crimes in our community. How do we begin to address that issue?
Start here in Columbus, the unemployment ratio. Young people not working. Ladies, is that I did this because I was hungry. I did this because I was trying to identify monies, but a household find some solutions to the unemployment ratio. Someone mentioned something about parenting earlier in South Columbus. That if I did something out of order, I had to deal with maybe three parents before I even got to my house.
To come out of the house, come out yeah. of their house out the dark. Yes. I mean, you know, let's yes. get to the reality of it. Somebody getting to know yes. the neighbor, you know, it's happening right there in front of your face. You know, community law,
some,
at least
there are some weekend. Communities within this place that the police won't even go to. Let's be real. We've got people like Norman Coors, individuals like that who are going right. directly right. into those communities right. and dealing with mentorship, education, connecting with one. And he's doing a great job. And he's doing an outstanding job.
We got 30 more seconds. Pastor Chester, as the youngest pastor in the city and a part of the generation that we're seeing a lot of the challenges from, how do we address the crime issue? You went to school parents. How do we get them to focus on education? How do we get them to respect our women and stop using ugly words? What do we do?
Same job.
Yes. J squared. All right. Well, you guys, I hate to cut this short. This has been an amazing conversation.
Teddy,
if I can get you to please.
1,000 voters, I mean people, residents in Muskogee County. Yes. And is 106,000 voters.
Registered voters.
Look, registered voters in Muskogee County.
How many?
106,000.
106,000 plus.
And yet we have a mayoral election with less than 30,000 people.
Yes.
My God.
Yes.
We got to close this out. Let's give Davis Broadcasting a round of applause for doing this. We're going to close out thinking K92.7, Praise 100 Watts, AM 1340, 94.1 FM, as well as Fox at 105. This has been a serious community conversation. We plan to continue these. We hope you'll continue to listen. We hope you'll continue to support Davis Broadcasting and always listen to Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese on Sundays on your various stations. Thank you so much.
The views and expressions of Sunday Conversations are not the views of Davis Broadcasting Incorporated, advertisers, nor their staff. Do you have questions or concerns or want to be a guest on Sunday Conversation? Come and join me, Teddy Reese. Send me an email at sundayconversations@dbicolumbus.com.